Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should.
I can't breathe, but I'm no fool. Anxiety's high with emotions pulled.
Folks, welcome back to Guitar Radio Show. Our next guest returns to us not only as a world-renowned builder of fine guitars, but as an artist, musician, songwriter, and honestly, a badass guitarist. He has a new record coming on December 1st with his band 8Lock. The album is called Lions Roaring in Quicksand. Please welcome back to Guitar Radio Show, Mr. Paul Reed Smith. How are you, Paul?
I'm good, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks.
You're being sweet. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being here. So, eight people locked together. Three drummers, three guitarists, one bass player, and an amazing voice. How did that happen?
Well, the Paul Reed Smith Band's been playing for a long time, and at one point there was a thing that happened with three bass players and one drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And Davey Knowles had to play around the same time as we did, and he's, don't ever do that to me again, because they got locked, all four bass players, three or four bass players and a drummer got locked, and it was, my mother was screaming on the side of the stage, didn't even know what was going on. The Truth Will Set You Free, which is an old Mother's Finest tune.
Yep.
And we decided to try it the other way around with three drummers and a bass player, and it worked. So we got to, so what happened was we got together at Maryland Hall, and we had written this tune for Dennis, Don't Give Up on Living, and we wanted to, you know, try and see if it worked. And we all stood on the stage, and I had Whitney Houston's drummer, Chuck Brown's drummer, and Santana's drummer all playing bass drums and snare drums at the same time, and it about took my head off. And there was no mics, there was no monitors, and it hurt. And I stood in the middle of it, and I could hear Dennis think. And I was like, this is horrible. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I never heard anything like it in my life. When we got done practicing the tune, I looked at Dennis and said, what do you want to do? He says, well, let's record it. We got done recording Don't Give Up on Living, and I said, Dennis, what do you want to do? He says, let's do another one. We never decided to do a record. We just kept saying, let's do another one. And it just kind of happened organically. And, you know, Juju took the lead on some of the drums. Greg took the lead on some of the drums, and Dennis took the lead on a lot of the drums. And we just kept going at it and going at it and going at it for about 3 years. And then we tried to mix it, and the band came to me and said, you don't have a good enough mixer. You don't have the skills to do what it is. And so I hired Brett King, who was Ricky Skaggs' engineer from Nashville. I got him out of retirement, and he came up here and mixed for 3 days, and then we started to get a handle on the mix, and then we had to get a handle on the mastering. How are we going to add hip-hop bass to this new kind of music, which was very, very interesting. Did you hear how much bass is on this?
Oh, it's outstanding, and it all just falls together. It's a calliope.
Well, that was a lot of hard work and a lot of failure. What's the word? wisdom comes from grand mistakes. And we finally got it. And when we had it, we started, oh my God, we got it. We finally got it. And then the record company said, we'll release it. And I said, okay. And then things started to fall into place. But it wasn't like normal. It was one song at a time, one tune at a time. We'd get together and go after these tunes. I'll give you an example. I called Dennis and I said, I want to redo War. He goes, we still do that, huh? In other words, as a human race, we still war. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, we do it. He says, okay, let's do it. That was it. Decision was over. When I said, let's do Love and Happiness, I said, well, why do you want to do it, Paul? And I'm like, well, because it's the only tune I know in the whole world that nobody ever turns off if it comes up on Spotify or the radio, ever. They never turn it off.
Right.
They just don't. If it's that good a tune, let's do it. So we went after that. And then, you know, the courage of these musicians to go after tunes like that. These people have been supporting other musicians their whole lives, but they have a lot to say themselves.
Yeah.
And so my job was to get them to be themselves, not for them to warp themselves into making somebody else's music work. I wanted it to be their music.
Mm-hmm.
And it was animated discussions, let me tell you.
I believe it. So let me get this straight. It was over a course of 3 years of just recording a tune here, recording a tune there, and then it was an album.
That's correct.
Okay, so once that's all done,
the way through it, we knew we had a record coming.
So once that's all done, how do you sequence that? So so what song's gonna? Because you know, I want to talk to you about certain tracks.
Well, you listened to the record. Was it sequenced right?
It's completely. I thought it was all one session.
That was a mistake. Basically, if you listen to it, the one tune ends and the next one comes right in.
Yeah.
That's because they didn't put any seconds between the tunes when they mastered it. And because it was all recorded in the same place, it sounds like one session.
It does.
That was not one session, babes.
Wow.
No way.
Wow. That blows me away because it really does sound like that. It's complete. How in the heck? I mean, that's a great studio. That can, you know.
Oh, sweet. I rebuilt it 3 times. It failed 3 times. The wisdom of great mistakes. Oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah. Happy accidents, man. Totally.
Well, was a lot of people contributing to the thing. I have had a lot of experts. Look, the definition of an expert is somebody in a very complicated area that solves a very complicated problem over and over again. That, by definition, is an expert. Mm-hmm. And a whole bunch of them helped me get that studio straightened out.
Hmm. That's so cool.
Just the vocal mics, just the drum mics, just the all of it was a long, hard-fought battle.
So here's another question for you, because I'm fascinated by it. What does the title of the record mean?
Well, she sings that line, I'm a lion roaring in quicksand and I can't breathe. And for me, it was the Syrian war, the Ukraine war, the Israeli war, all the horrible wars that are going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we're this really strong group of people roaring in quicksand. We're not drowning, but what are we going to do about these situations? The shootings in the schools, the Floyd thing, all the racial stuff going on. We feel strong, but we're trying to roar, but it's kind of quicksand. It actually makes sense when you think about it from what can we do from our spiritual position? So what we decided to do was tell everybody what we think about all this stuff through the music, which is allowed. That's allowed to be done. Musicians can talk about social situations in song. War was complaining about the Vietnam War.
Right.
Well, guess what? It's still going on.
Yeah.
And
generations have poor memories.
That's what, you know. I don't know. It's, maybe.
You know,
I
always say it's about civics class, you know, or history class. You know, if you don't teach, you know, what's that old saying? Those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it.
I think people that do know history are doomed to repeat it.
Yeah, I guess.
I thought we would have outgrown war by now.
Yeah, me too.
Well.
And poverty.
Not what's going on the news.
Mm-hmm.
That hurts. I mean, that hurts. I don't really know. Name one tune and I'll tell you what it's about.
Okay.
Name any of them.
Okay, cool. I keep going back to, there's two tunes that I keep going back to. And I got to hear, I got to hear that again. I got to hear. One is Sarah and the other is He's the One.
Okay, so Sarah was written for my daughter. It's 15 years ago, 20 years ago, a long time ago.
Wow.
Well, and it was written for her because it was originally called Blue Sarah, and it was the first verse is about there's trouble in the water, and the second verse is we got to deal with it, and the third verse is it's getting better and there's hope. And that's what I was trying to tell my daughter. The thing that's interesting about that tune is it's in 7 and swinging. So it wasn't written that way, and Gary said, let's swing it. So I mean, it's swinging in 7.
Mm-hmm.
We played it with we opened up for Dumpster Funk, and the band was sitting behind us looking at us going, oh my God, they're swinging in 7. And that was Gary's idea. But I'm sorry, that was Dennis Chambers' bass player in Scofield's band for a long, long time, and he's one of the best bass players alive.
Mm-hmm.
And what am I supposed to say when he takes my tune and completely changes it? Thank you, Gary. I mean, so it was a combination of this tune in 7, written for my daughter so she could feel better, and of all weird things, Phoenix in My Blood was written by my daughter. So,
So there's a visceral connection.
Huh?
There's a visceral connection.
Hold on.
A visceral connection for that song in you.
Yeah, I'm a parent, you know.
Yeah, I can dig it.
He's the One was originally called She's the One, and it was supposed to be a concert song where, oh my God, there she is. She's right there. And others look and others see, my God, the one for me. It's about falling in love.
Mm-hmm.
So Mia, the record company was saying things about radio songs, and I said, well, there's this old tune called She's the One, maybe Mia could sing it. And we just got together and demoed it, and you're listening to the demo. I mean, that tune I played bass on, mm-hmm. on the guitar. It was just a demo, and it sounded so good we left it. But that's an old tune. It was written 20 years ago.
Wow.
And it was from the point of view of a singer walking to the front of the stage and there's somebody in the audience that they fall in love with. And oh my God, there she is. She's the one. That was what I was thinking at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mia made it her own. And the groove is very interesting. It's it's got this kind of three-piece rock feel to it that's somewhere between funk and Van Halen.
Yeah, and it's gritty. I think it's probably the grittiest tune on the record.
Yeah, I think so. I like the tune.
Me too.
You know what's interesting? We haven't played it live yet.
Oh, wow.
And
you've got a show coming up at the end of the month, right?
Yeah, we're playing at the Lyric in Baltimore for Hopkins, and we're playing at the Ram's Head. I'm really looking forward to what's coming for this band because the interviews for this record have been going incredibly well. And I knew we had a good record, but I didn't have any reviews of it. And there's an attitude in the band, what market are you going after? And I was begging them to just go after good music.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting, Mark, the whole second record's already written.
Oh, wow.
It's sitting in the can ready to go.
You recorded?
all the demos are done. It's not recorded, but wow. It's sitting in there ready. The songs are ready to be recorded. This is a interesting group. Songs come when they come. They just, you know, for me, I feel trapped on an airplane. You got an elbow monger on one side and somebody ramming into you with a cart on the other side. And my arms are like pushed together and I got a pad of paper. I'm writing as fast as I can. It's miserable.
Well, see, this leads me to my next question. You fascinate me. You always have. You've always had, whatever you do, you have a dogged pursuit of whatever you fancy, and it usually comes to fruition. What is your mindset, your philosophy? When you get up in the morning, do you ever get up in the morning and go, ugh, I don't want to do this? Or are you saying to yourself, I'm all in on everything?
Neither.
What are
neither.
You? What are
neither.
You?
There's two kinds of people in the world. The ones that have so much to offer the world, they go, I got nothing to offer. And everybody goes, no, you really are good. No, I got nothing to offer. Come on, man, come with us. And then the other people going, I got a lot to offer. And the people go, you got nothing. No, really, I do. Nah, you got nothing. Stay home. I'm in the second group. So to me, I always thought that, you know, I had ideas that were to offer. And everybody's going, no. But... you know, I got auditioned for this band for a year and a half. I'm going to answer your question at the very end. I got auditioned in this band. I got invited to play in Julia Nixon's band, who was the woman who sang Color Purple on Broadway. And I played it for a year and a half without getting paid. And at the end of the whole thing, Gary said, well, I've thought about it. I'm the new bass player. And I went, nah. He goes, nah, you are. I am. Now, I got inducted into a schooling of how these musicians play. When Dennis is in the studio with us, he doesn't talk to us. He sits in the back with a cup of coffee and watches after his brood. Let's see how well you play for him. Oh my God. You think when it's time for you to play, you don't have your A game on? Oh. The answer is no. For me, it's all about the fact that I'd rather die trying than guy saying I could have tried. And I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, I'd rather
try and fail than not try and say I could have tried.
I mean,
the one thing that I do have something for is somehow I'm able to get everybody in the same room and get them to go for it. You get them on the same page. Let's try this, guys. You know, let's try this. I mean, God bless Mia showing up. I mean, you know, we somehow Mia ended up singing for us, and that's just a gift from God. She can sing. That woman was in the gospel choir at three and a full time member at six because her mother was a piano player. She came across it honestly.
Yeah. Now she's the top of the masthead there. I mean, it's just like, wow, that voice is astounding. We opened the show with the new single, which actually comes out today, November 10th, the song Breathe. Man, I mean, if that isn't radio friendly, I don't know what, you know?
Oh, well, you haven't heard the Chuck Brown tune is, I think, the single that's really going to do well. Look at the moon, but that's a whole different animal on a different day. I don't know. It's an honor to be anywhere near music. I'm a guitar maker who wants to be a musician. Dennis is a drummer, and Gary's a bass player who don't want to be guitar maker.
So when you're laying out a song and you're talking about parts, you got three guitar players. How does that get doled out? Or is it organic?
Well, no. It actually has a method to it. What's the groove? So somebody has an idea of what the groove is, you know, and then Dennis would say, what's Juju thinking? Juju would write parts the night before for each of the three drummers, and then they'd futz with it, they'd play with it, they didn't like some parts of it, they liked some parts of it. I mean, just imagine the kind of experience that Greg Granger has playing a Whitney's band live for all those years,
yeah.
Or Juju had playing in Chuck Brown's band, or Dennis playing in Parliament Funkadelic and Santana and Steely Dan.
And three different places, three different, musical spectrums.
Right, and so I thought we were the Baltimore-Washington Parkway. We were going to connect Baltimore Funk and D.C. Go-Go.
Right.
Like I said, it's painful because you got all these, you know, geniuses in a room and they're all going at it. And it, when people disagree, it's difficult to be around, especially when you have that caliber of human being.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't trade it for the world. And somehow I feel comfortable in the middle of it. When this stuff comes out of the speakers and we finally get good tracks, we're dancing. We can't believe what just happened. When that groove and any of those tunes happened, we were like, we caught it. We caught the football. We got it. You know, did you hear the fill in I, Doctor that Dennis played about two-thirds of the way through?
Yeah, yeah.
We couldn't talk after he played that. But it went by so fast. I couldn't even, until... You know, we mixed it. I couldn't even sing what he did. I was like, what did you just do? Are you that good? That was the astounding part, mixing it. Are you guys that good? Not me, not the guitar players.
Well, and it all ends up sounding...
When I was in Nashville, they thought a drummer mixed it.
Well, it all ends up sounding like it's one drummer. That's the crazy part.
Well, it's not. It's three.
I know. That's what's amazing. And you know, I've gone onto YouTube to look at some video, and it's just like, whoa, that's incredible what's going on there. You know, folks, just as a sidebar, folks, go to 8lockband.com. Check out the website on the, I think it's on the homepage. No, it's not on the homepage. It's on, there's a video with them sitting around a campfire basically talking about this experience. It is so cool to hear them talking about this and what it meant to them and how these people are completely intertwined, not only musically, but personally and professionally. It's super cool to see that.
We've been friends since we were kids.
Oh,
except
wow.
Mia and Bill. We've been friends, you know, I got indoctrinated into this thing. I don't even know how I got in it, man. I shouldn't be in the middle of this thing. I've said that a million times to me. I said, I shouldn't be in the middle of this. How do you and I get in the same bucket? She goes, I don't know. Let's go.
Just hold on and go.
I'll tell you a story about Mia. It's a good story. Paul Rogers, the great singer from Bad Company, mm-hmm. was supposed to sing at one of our events, and he had to cancel till the last minute, and we need a singer for somebody to sing a tune called Be My Friend. And she was brought to me, and she was in my car, and we were going back to my house, and I said, sing. You know, it was an audition, really. And she goes, I said, stop. I don't want to hear, no, you can't do that. She goes, but that's the way I was taught to sing. I said, lady, would Aretha do that? And she looked at me and she goes, no, she wouldn't. We took her in the house. Kevin Walker, the bass player from Justin Timberlake's band, and I took her in the house and made her sing downstairs up to us on the second floor for 2.5 hours. Baby, be my friend. Baby, be my friend. I will love you to the very end, over and over and over again, until she delivered the melody and the words, not acrobatics.
Right.
And she looked at us at the end of that. She said, I can do that. I can do that. So we brought her in to sing. And she sang a tune called Runaway Train. And she absolutely drilled it. And Greg had never met her. And he goes, Paul, I really like the way she sings. He was listening. And you got to think, this was Whitney Houston's drummer, right? And he goes, I really like the way she sings. And we had this session, and she drilled it. And they, as they're walking out of the studio, Gary and Greg looked at me, the bass player drummer, said, hire her. It's not going to go well. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, it's going to be the Paul Reed Smith band. Then it's going to be the Paul Reed Smith band with Mia. Then it's going to be Mia and the Paul Reed Smith band. Then it's going to be Mia and we're going to get fired. That's how good she is. We think she's a walking nightmare. But hire her. So I called her up and I said, they think you're a nightmare. They think that this is what's going to happen. I told her the whole story. And she goes, you know something? I'm easy to get along with. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It'll never happen. I'm easy to get along with. That's never going to happen. And guess what? It never has. Yeah. And she gave us her word that day. And she has been an integral band member. And she does not have LSD. She does not have lead singer's disease. She's been great. She's been great. She never has words on the stage. She just sings with everything she's got. She's like a wild Mustang that you got to kind of put a bit in her mouth.
She's amazing. I mean, it really is the perfect combination of all these people all coming to fruition. It's amazing. It really is. I want to ask you about
live. She's good with an audience.
Yeah, I was looking at the vids and it's true. It's true.
She's good with all she wants is a chance. We got a chance to play at the Forum with Mana, and she just, you know, singing to a place that holds 18,000 people. She felt like she'd gone home. She can't wait. She's chomping at the bit to do these festivals. She wants it so bad.
Yeah, that's another question for you. You are such a busy guy. How in the world do you find time for everything you do?
Well, I used to go fishing. I don't fish anymore. I'm working on the studio. I don't know. I sleep, I don't know, 7.5 hours. I don't know.
It just appears to me that you
want something done, ask somebody too busy to do it. That's the way it works, Mark. If you want something done, ask Mark. He'll get it done.
Yeah, I mean, it's just fascinating to me. I mean, I'm similar in the sense that I have a lot of irons in the fire, a lot. And I sleep through the night, for sure.
Right. I'm sorry, I get the chance to play it with a this love caliber musician.
Oh, yeah, you can't turn it down.
What are you going to say, no?
No, that would be insane. That would be insane, yeah. Absolutely.
So well, I don't have time for this interview, Mark. It's I'm sorry. I can't do it. No, give me a break.
Another track I want to ask you about because I really dig it. Yeah. Driving at Night. I love that.
That's just a good fun. That's just good fun.
It is.
There is a story to that.
Okay.
No, that's a blues.
Yeah.
So you would go from G to C to G to D. That's a blues.
Right.
Gary says, nah, let's go to B flat. It's changing keys constantly from G minor to B flat minor.
And constant time signatures.
It keeps changing keys and changing keys and changing keys. At the end of the tune, we're just going back and forth between different keys. And I played the tune for John Mary. He says, well, I've never heard anybody do that to a blues before. But only a really sophisticated jazz musician would even think like that.
Yeah.
And but look, you get a guitar. Let me get a guitar. Hold on a second.
Okay.
I'll play it. You should be able to hear it over the radio. Hold on a second. Yeah. And it goes to here. So. Then it goes up. Oh, what fun. Gary, I love you for doing that. I mean, we're learning the tune at sound check at the Ram's Head, and he goes, "Nah, don't go to C, go to B flat minor." We went, "What?" He goes, "Nah, try that." Oh, we came unglued. We were like, "That is so cool. Good job."
Yeah, that's cool. I dig the lead break in there too.
Well, that's Michael. Michael plays that well, and then he always says he doesn't like it. Erase it, do it again. We throw him out of the studio. He played that the first time. We threw him out. Goodbye. It sounds like a Steely Dan solo.
Yeah, it does. You're right. It does. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do? Not call Michael? He's just a gift from God.
So I told a couple of friends of mine, particularly my one of the contributors here at the show, my buddy Rob Wingler, and he said, "You know, Mark, there's a question you have to ask." And,
right.
And I said, "Yeah, I know what the question is." And we both said it at the same time.
It is,
did you only use PRS guitars on the project, or did you use other guitars in your collection?
I don't have a collection. I only use PRS guitars. You got to be kidding me. What an awful question. You win. No. Look, here's what your listeners don't know. I have a deal with my company.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody makes a better guitar, I'm going to play it. And everybody knows that's the deal here.
Right.
If I had a better one in the studio, I'd play it. I swear to God, that's the deal. When you got to have your A game on for a record.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's just the way it works. I mean, if you go to the store to buy a toaster, what are there, 6 brands, something like that, 7 brands of toasters, maybe maximum?
Yeah.
You go to Amazon for music, what do you got, 32,000 brands of music? You know, it's the most competitive market there is in the whole world. You better bring your A game. It's all you got.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, they were all played on PRSs, and if they weren't, I would tell you.
I know you would.
I would.
No, I know.
I can tell you there was one non-PRS amp on it. I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Re-amped the bass through an old Ampeg B25 amp and mic'd it and added a teeny bit into it so it had a little bit more growl. That was not a PRS amp. That was an old Ampeg. It's an old trick done in New York where they would always reamp the bass through an old Ampeg amp and an old flip-top bass amp and mic it. And we did it for most of those tracks.
No DI?
PRS amps, PRS guitars, PRS basses. I don't make drums, although the drums that are on, all the drums on that record were a set of drums that we had completely modified. So we had futzed with the drums. We futzed with the mics. We had futzed with the mic pre's. We futzed with the reverbs. We futzed with everything.
So going back to the bass real quick, was there any DI or it was just all amp?
It was all DI, and then we reamped it through
to
the Ampeg.
Okay.
Which is standard fare when the Spin Doctors were recording, or all these bands were recording in New York. Standard fare. Learned it from a guy named Peter Denenberg, who is the recording professor at Purchase College in New York.
Very cool. So
tell your friend, no.
No.
No. Let me think about it. No. And let me think about it. No. No. And let me think about third. No. It's all PRS.
That's funny. I've actually got a 2408 on order right now.
Well,
I'm looking forward to it. Because I've got my custom 24, which I absolutely love, but I want those extra tones.
All right. So we have a thing called PTC, which is our PRS tech center. And if you have any troubles with it, send it and we'll straighten it out.
Right on.
Listen, people don't understand. Guitar repair people are important. If you had an old Stradivari, you'd have it in the shop all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay for a guitar to be taken care of by experts and brought up to snuff. That's fine.
Absolutely.
Look, all good recording studios have a tech in the basement repairing all the gear that broke every session.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Oh, God. We lost a channel the other day. I was like, no. It's just, I'm sorry, all this old gear breaks.
But it's warm.
It sounds good.
Yeah, it's warm. It just sounds so much better that way. Absolutely.
Yeah, well.
So let me ask you something. When I was talking about you earlier about, you know, the fact that your brain fascinates me and that, you know, I when I grow up someday, I want to be you, you know,
man, it's like, you don't want to be me.
What do you think in like 80 to 90 years? I have a theory. In 80 to 90 years, how do you think people are going to look back on you and your accomplishments?
I have no idea. What I wanted to say on my gravestone is good family member.
Hmm.
They're not going to talk about the guitars at my.
Oh, somebody will.
Me being a father. They're going to talk about me being a husband, me being a friend.
No, they're going to.
I think maybe you're right about that stuff in terms of, you know, the history and the guitar and the MI business. Maybe you're right. But in my world, my grandchildren mean everything to me. My children mean everything to me. My family, my wife, my kids, my friends. Look, you remember Tom Wheeler?
Yeah, absolutely.
The guy who was the editor of Guitar Player magazine.
Yeah, read every one of his columns.
20 years, yeah.
Yeah.
He had a heart attack and was dead before his head hit the rail. Mm. And he was one of my dearest friends in the whole world. You know, I've had a lot of people who I dearly loved, you know, have heart problems and not make it. I know a lot of people that have had heart problems and have made it, but I got to tell you, it makes you, those kind of events in your life make you very appreciative of that. One time my car got stolen, all weird things. And the guy was flipping out, who was my host for the event. I grabbed him. I said, did you see anybody dead? He goes, no. I said, you see anybody hurt? He says, no. I said, don't worry about it. Mm. For me, I don't know what they're going to say after I'm dead and gone. Mm. I don't know that I care. What I care about is what's the world going to be like for global warming-wise and war-wise for my children and my grandchildren and my grandchildren's grandchildren. That I care about.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to leave some really good instruments behind. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'd like to be able to play some music with these gifted musicians. I mean, I used to have a really big, long mop of hair that I could wring out like a towel after a shower. Now I'm going bald and my hair is white. I mean, it's not a fun change of events. But I feel young. I don't feel old.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like FaceTime. That'll make you look old. you ever notice that FaceTime adds 20 years?
Oh, without a doubt. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, nobody's talking about that one. What are they going to say about this phone addiction that's going on in the 22, 25 range? I mean, this phone addiction is unbelievable. People getting run over by cars because they're walking across the street looking at their phone.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw somebody fall into a fountain.
That's pretty funny.
I honestly, though, I think 80, 90 years from now, people are going to look back at your instruments the way they do at vintage Fenders and vintage Gibsons. That's how they're going to look at it. I really do. I think it's going to be, you know, I mean, it's already in many respects, you know, especially like the wood library stuff. I think it's going to be very coveted, very coveted.
Well, I can tell you this. I hope you're right. I do hope you're right. I think people are putting their hearts and souls into this stuff.
Yeah.
Here's one for your listeners. We got 450 people that work here.
Right.
What do you think happens when you put 450 people in a building?
It's a sociology experiment.
Uh-huh. They start getting married and dropping kids. That's exactly what happens. As fast as possible. For start of the first year. I'm fascinated by that part of it.
Yeah.
you put 450 people in a building and they start having relationships.
Yeah.
When I met Paige, my wife, she didn't know anything about guitars, never heard of me. I said, this is the greatest day ever.
it takes the edge off, right?
Look, they call me a gear slut. It comes from the internet. There was a site called Gear Sluts where people who were in love with recording gear and gear, you know, would go. And one day I was on eBay looking for something, and my wife looked at me. She says, are you sledding? I was cracking up. Oh, my God. I think that old gear has the promise of making you magic. The truth is it's mostly a lie.
Mm-hmm.
But once in a while, it is not. Once in a while, the people that made that gear flat out knew what they were doing. And you know, recently, I've been getting my hands on some of this old RCA original gear for recording that was in the 50s. And when that gear is up to snuff and working right, it sounds gorgeous. And according to the best person in the country for working on it, says these people absolutely knew what they were doing.
Hmm.
They had their stuff together. So to me, I like finding that old stuff. I do. I enjoy it.
Yeah. What, going back to the record, what's your favorite tune? Do you have a favorite? I mean, I know they're like children, so that's hard to pick one. But if you had to pick one.
Echoes for the message. Look at the moon for the groove. I'm ready for the fun of it. And 99 because it sounds like Queen.
Yeah, you're right. It does.
I Doctor is the first time a Mana song's ever been sung in English. Fair, the singer, asked us to do it. It's not spoken about on the record, but I Doctor is a Mana song. They're the Latin Beatles. We got allowed to do one in English.
And that's never been done?
No, never been done.
That's pretty cool.
Mana, if you go to the Staples Center, they play four nights in a row. You go to Madison Square Garden, they play two or three nights in a row.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's not, when they play in South America, it's, you know, 30,000 seat soccer stadiums. A lot of people, unless you're Latino, you don't really know about Mana, but Mana is a household worldwide band.
Yeah, I did not know who they were until I was doing the research for this.
Unbelievable.
He's cool.
The Latin Bruce Springsteen. He can, at the very end of the show, he pulls out a spotlight and he puts it in the eyes of every single person in the entire place so he can communicate with them. The guy's a genius. Yeah. I saw John Mayer do a Bruce Springsteen thing the other day. He turned Madison Square Garden into a little wooden club. You felt like you're sitting right next to him.
Yeah, he has that way of just sucking you in, that guy.
He really knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
he sure does. I've seen Bruce Springsteen do it so many times. It's this big concert, and all of a sudden you're in a club.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in the place looks around. What just happened here spiritually?
Yeah.
That he has the ability to spiritually change an entire room with 18,000 people in it?
Yeah.
That's just stupid good.
Yeah, Billy Joel does that too. He's another one that does that. Without a doubt.
I saw Johnny Winter do it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Supposedly Hendrix was good at it. I don't know. I've seen some people do it. It's the difference between listening to a band and watching a gifted concert.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure.
I saw Sting on the Blue Turtles tour. I saw the drummer and bass player hypnotize the entire audience, and the audience lost their noodles and started coming unglued. They started moving their bodies. They couldn't control themselves.
That's amazing.
So my favorite tune on the whole record, if you had to pick one.
Yeah. It's tough, I know.
Echoes.
Echoes. Okay, cool.
Because, you know what it's about?
Because of the message.
Yeah, because it's about the echo that these musicians have that they hear all the time, they see all the time. You know, it was never an echo of a black crow. It was the real words were, it was an echo of a Jim Crow. And quite frankly, we hear echoes all the time, echoes of World War II, echoes of slavery, echoes of wars, echoes of all kinds of things. And we have to live with them. And the message in that tune is, let's make love more important than listening to the echo of pain. Mm-hmm. So I like the tune. I love the tune. Yeah. I enjoy playing it. It's got a pretty intro. That's three drummers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty hypnotic in and of itself, that song.
Yeah, well, if we do another record, I'm going to do a dance record. I'm gonna go for the mating ritual of the human race, dancing.
So it'll be like a real go-go record?
I don't know if it's going to be go-go. I think it's going to be a combination. But, I really like Janet Jackson's What Have You Done For Me Lately, you know, all that stuff. It just makes you want to dance.
Oh, yeah.
I like that stuff that makes you want to dance.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever been to Tipitina's, the club in New Orleans?
Yes.
It's a spiritual event. The people literally get into this hypnotic thing where they all move together like a flock of birds. I love going to Tipitina's. I think it's the best club on the planet.
Yeah, it's hallowed ground. That's what it is.
It's hallowed ground.
It is truly mojo. That's where mojo lives. Place like that.
Well, there's 120 active clubs in that town.
Yeah.
Nashville's the only place where bands are really playing live in the studio like they used to. D.C. and Baltimore is the land of the drummers. We just keep making drummers for great bands. There's a huge gospel thing here. There's a Chicago music scene. There's a Seattle music scene. There's an L.A. music scene. There's a Austin music scene. There's a Dallas music scene. There's a Boston. There's a New York. All these towns have different feels and grooves. Atlanta is where Mother's Finest came from.
Mm-hmm.
What a band. You ever seen them?
Oh, yeah. I saw them with, oh, my God. This is a long time ago now. This is like got to be 76, 77 maybe.
Oh, you're dating yourself.
Yeah,
Mark.
I sure am.
Be careful.
Oh, man. I don't think it... I'm trying to remember who it was with.
What a band.
They were opening. Oh, man. I can't remember who it was with. Maybe Cheap Trick? I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, they blew me away.
They were so good they used to get fired from tours because... it happened. I remember Neil Sean was talking to me about a Journey tour once, and the opener got fired, and they got this little band from Australia to open up for them. They said it was a war every night. This new band that went on tour was called AC/DC.
Yeah, man.
He said they got off the stage, and we had our work cut out for us.
Yeah, that's a band that would just leave a hole in the middle of the stage. You had to try not to fall in.
They knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
They still know what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. So now
this fact that I'm even involved in a conversation about a new record that I actually think it's a good record and it's fun and it ends as well as it starts. I enjoy that. One of the things that Brent King, who helped us mix this record, said, he said, well, Paul, it never stops. It just keeps going. There's not a poor tune on the record. That was important to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing that really blows me away, and I've already said it, but it blows me away, is that it sounds like it was all one session. That's the crazy part.
Isn't that the idea?
It is, absolutely. That's what everybody hopes for, but not everybody gets. I mean, I've heard records where it was the whole session, and it didn't sound like that. It sounded like just, you know, a mishmash. This is, it has a complete ebb and flow.
Well, that's sweet.
All the way through.
Look, it's the same drum set all three drummers played on. So there is, and it's the same recording studio, it's the same singer, and it's the same guitar players and the same bass players. So that helps. But the musicians poured their heart and souls into this thing.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, what do you think my main job, other than gathering the troops and getting them to perform well, was in the room? bringing Dennis coffee and making sure the cream and the coffee and the honey he had in his coffee was right. If you got Dennis Chambers sitting in your room, you better make sure he's taken care of.
and highly caffeinated.
Well, I mean, you know, for people who don't know, he's considered the greatest drummer alive.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many times I thanked him for the way he taught. He does not teach normal. He teaches by being. He sits in the room and watches after his brood. And at one point, he gave me a very hard time. He called me up. He says, "You have a performance problem on this tune, Paul." I said, "No, we'll fix it in the mix." "No, you have a performance problem. Re-record it." That was it. It was over. There was no more discussion.
Hmm.
God had spoken. We were done.
And you had to get, so how many takes was it then?
Well, we had to re-record the groove in Man on the Moon.
Oh, wow.
And we got back together and we re-recorded it. He only made one demand out of 14 tunes. He only made one, but when he came after me, that was it. It was over. You know, Gary was adamant about the groove in Love and Happiness.
Oh yeah, that's gospel right there.
So we went after you don't go after war. You don't go after Love and Happiness. You don't touch these tunes.
Mm-hmm.
But we loved them, so, and we weren't afraid of them. I can tell you, we got permission to record a Bob Marley tune for Hopkins, and I had to play the swing part. And sitting there, I got through it, and I did it really well. But having somebody like him stare at you while you're playing the part is a little unnerving. But, you know, what an honor. I mean, to be around musicians of that caliber, what an honor. Mark, what an honor. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I can dig it.
They played those parts. Those weren't Pro Tools parts. They played that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Folks, like I said earlier, go to 8lockband.com and just read the resumes in the bios section of the website. Holy cow. I mean, it is a veritable who's who of experience going on there. Was that at all intimidating for you?
No, it was touching.
Yeah.
What was it? It was only intimidating if I couldn't have played my part. When it was time for me to play, if I couldn't play my part. You know, Dennis, he never complimented me. He wouldn't compliment me. And I finally called him up. I said, "You compliment me all the time. You don't say anything to me." And he goes, "You're doing fine. Don't worry about it." Those people aren't going to show up unless they like the way the other musicians play.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Just their very presence.
You kidding? This is their legacy too.
Yeah.
This is their legacy too. It's not intimidating. It's an honor. To get these musicians to be able to be themselves and not try to support somebody else's music. I mean, when Dennis is playing in Steely Dan, he's trying to make Steely Dan music happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at Dennis going, "I don't want you to do what you think I want you to do. I want you to do as much Dennis as possible, as much Juju as possible, as much Gary as possible, as much Greg as possible." How many kids tell you how many times I look at Mia and say, "What would Mia sing? I want more Mia. I want more Bill. I want more Michael. I don't want what you think." By the way, if you're thinking, you're stinking. Very, very often, the whole job is to throw the musician off their center so they just play.
Right, so they're just in the moment.
You want them when they're, you got to use your head, but the best football is when they're just playing football.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
No, it's not intimidating. It's an honor. I can't even believe they're driving in. I mean, like, we're pinching ourselves. There's a session. We're getting excited. Who's who? who's going to get him lunch? How much coffee do you need? What do you need, Dennis? Oh, I want more coffee.
So you've got these gigs. Are there going to be any other gigs after this? Will there be a tour?
Yeah, God, yes. Well, I hope we're going to do a pile of festivals with Mint Talent this summer. Of course, but that's we couldn't exciting. Do it without a calling card. The record is the calling card.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, you got a hell of a calling card.
We have nothing. Carlos Santana says, no song, no band.
Yeah. That's cool.
By the way, what do you think the next single is?
Oh,
I know we're releasing Breathe, but we're thinking it's going to be Look at the Moon. I want to know what you think, Mark. Now, welcome to Paul. This is how I do a session. What do you guys think?
I like Look at the Moon. Honestly, I'd want to go for the throat and do He's the One.
I'll tell the manager you said that.
Well, you know, because you had Sarah, you have Breathe, which, like I said, is very radio friendly. You know, it's got this.
No, it's a very different kind of groove than the radio's ever heard before.
True, but it's got this vibe to it. It's like, okay, this, I could hear this on multiple Sirius XM channels. You know what I'm saying? Whereas He's the One, you're going to hear also on multiple channels, but not the same channels that Breathe would be on. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's movie music.
Yeah, it should be. Everything. I think music should be cinematic in nature. It should have a visual component that takes you somewhere.
Yeah, I think when we recorded these tunes, I thought they were movie music.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a movie someday called I Can't Breathe, and I think that tune belongs on it, but
sure.
It wasn't written for that. It was written because at the time there were certain human experiences that happened where all people have trouble breathing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I'm looking forward. I'm hoping
on the I Can't Breathe thing, but that it was written before that.
I'm hoping y'all get to Texas so I can see the band. That would be a blast.
We'll set up a gig. We'll show up, Mark. We'll do it in our living room.
Hey, I'll hook you up. I'll find you someplace to play. This town's got plenty of places to play, that's for sure. In Austin.
I've got friends in Austin. David Grissom, Eric Johnson.
Oh, yeah. I see David almost every Tuesday night. As long as he's playing.
One of the greatest gunslingers on the planet.
Oh, absolutely.
I saw him blow up an amp, get mad, at the Whiskey a Go-Go, plug into another amp, crank it all the way up, walk out to the front of the stage, and burn it down. I mean, what's the name of that club in Austin where people like to play loud? Antones?
Antones, yeah.
Right, yeah. One time, I was there, and Storyville had just played a beautiful set, and I wanted them to come back out, so I got a... What is the beer you guys drink? It's called
Lone Star?
No.
Shiner?
Shinerbock.
Okay.
And I pulled the Shinerbock out, had the top off it. I said, if I down this whole beer, will you get this band back on the stage? And the crowd looked at me and nodded, so I downed the whole beer right in front of them, and they started screaming. And that was the end of that. And as David walked on the stage, he says, what did you do to get us back?
That's great. He's a great guy. I love him to death. And, man, I'm in awe every time I see him. It's never the same show. And I've seen the show, I don't know, 50, 60 times maybe I've seen this show.
Wow.
And,
good for you.
And it's never the same. Even if he's playing some of the same songs in the set, the intention changes.
It's different, yeah.
Yeah.
So for all your listeners, David Grissom is a gifted guitar player.
Oh, yeah. He's been on this show.
Started in Ely's band and Mellencamp and all this other
Joe
stuff.
Joe Ely, yeah.
Man, even though he's not from Texas, he plays Texas guitar.
Oh, yeah.
And he is from Texas now. Boy,
yeah.
Can he play?
Oh, yeah.
And what a guitar player. I mean, Eric Johnson is one of the greatest guitar players alive.
Oh, I agree. So I know we got to let you go, but one last gear question. And this is more of a personal nature for me. I'm a left-handed guitar player, And I love my
piano. They don't make left-handed pianos, Mark. What are you doing?
I love my custom 24. I can't wait to get my 2408. But man, will there ever be a Silver Sky Core or SE left-handed?
I don't know.
Okay.
But we made a lot of really good left-handed guitars in our day.
Sure did. The baritone is killer.
Look, the pot's got to be backwards. The knobs have to be backwards. The nut has to be backwards. The case has to be backwards. The bridge has to be backwards. The body has to be backwards. The pickguard's got to be backwards. Headstock's got to be backwards. The tuning pegs aren't backwards. The frets aren't backwards. Inlays are backwards. Neck shape's got to be backwards. Everything's got to be backwards. And when it's done, I can't play the thing. So how am I supposed to check something I can't play?
Well,
you know, left-handed guitar players.
I'm telling you, when you make the Silver Sky left-handed, I'm buying two, I'm telling you.
All right, my friends.
Paul, thank you so much. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
It was great having you on again. I love you to death.
Thanks,
and you're a hero.
Right.
Hey, folks, like I said, 8lockband.com. This record comes out on December 1st. It's Lions Roaring in Quicksand. Thanks again, Paul. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, GuitarRadioShow.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Find Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, if you like the artists you hear on Guitar Radio Show, don't just stream their music, buy it.
GRS Productions.